We're back with the Mainland Podcast, everybody. I am Michael Citro from themainland.com, and of course, joining me as always, some of our staff, and actually right now, we're missing some of our staff. We've got some technical things going on, but Andrew Harrison is here with me. Andrew, how are you doing tonight?
I'm having a good one, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. We also have Daniel McGann, who will be checking in with us shortly. Daniel's kind of fading in and out tonight, it appears, but we'll get him back on the call, and he'll be with us momentarily. Anyway, we're coming off second consecutive win. Orlando City winning 1-0 at Chicago last Saturday night after a previous Sunday beating Sporting Kansas City at home. Back-to-back wins, Andrew. It feels pretty darn good to say 6 points out of six the last 2 weeks.
After having 2 months where it felt like it was just getting longer, we weren't getting a win, it felt really good to say that we've got 6 points. I'm just hoping that it hasn't come too late for us to make that final push into the playoffs.
Yeah, hopefully it's not too late. The big, not a coincidence, I don't think, is that Breck Shea comes back and the team's playing better. The team was in really good form through May and June, and at the end of June, Breck Shea goes down with an injury, has to have surgery after the Colorado game, and then 2 months of misery without without Breck Shea. So is Breck Shea just the be-all, end-all for this team this year?
I mean, you don't want to say so, but you've got to think that when, you know, stats don't lie, he came on, his substitutions just made such a great difference to our game style. He opened up so many more avenues for us going forward, and he really eased the pressure on the midfield for people who were getting tired. And you don't want to say that maybe it was just his fresh legs, but maybe it's just his quality, too, that has really opened up some teams. I think we had some moments of brightness without him. I just think we have to say that we have to give him some credit for being able to change the way that the team the way he did. But you also have to give some credit to Rochez because he was the one that was coming on and partnering him in those changes. And, you know, two goals, two games together, and that's a pretty good turnaround for a young DP, too.
Absolutely. We're going to welcome Daniel McGann in now. Daniel, hopefully we'll have you here to stay. We've been having some technical issues tonight.
Yeah, we've had some pretty bad technical issues, which I've never had before. But speaking on Shea's, you know, about his gameplay, it's been fantastic since he's been back, and Rochez as well. But I think the issue is so much with the difference between Rochez and Kyle Larinas. Kyle's probably just been beat down from the season. I think this is his first year in MLS. He's played a lot of minutes. He's played up top by himself for a lot of those minutes, running back and forth and trying to get into the box with some big center defenders. And I think that's taking its toll now because with that kind of youth, you don't come in the type of shape that you necessarily need to be in for a full MLS season. And don't forget about all his call-ups as well. All the MLS travel, the international call-ups for Canada's side, and a full season's finally taken its toll on him. But it's going to help him out for next year, and it's good to see Rochez coming into his own right now because we do have another option where earlier in the year everyone else was either injured or we would have had to put Pedro super slow in there and see what he could have done.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and it's a good thing you point out the international call-ups because it's not just the meaningful minutes and the number of games, which is probably double what he played in college in MLS, but then you've got meaningful, very important World Cup qualifiers and very meaningful minutes, and that's a lot of pressure to put on a young striker to throw him in and represent his country, and then all the extra travel involved with that to these little island nations that they've been playing against and that kind of thing. So a very hectic year for Kyle Larin. It's not a surprise to see him tail off. We've been hearing it from Adrian Heath for months that at some point Kyle Larin's going to get tired and things are, you know, aren't going to go as well for him for a bit, and he's going to have to regain his legs and push through it. And, you know, they call it the rookie wall. You hit the rookie wall. And he's hit that, but, you know, he's still had some moments against Chicago where he was able to get free, and Carlos Rivas did a good job finding him. And, you know, maybe a fresher Kyle Larin puts those in. and maybe it's not coming down to an 86th minute goal. Maybe it's, you know, taken care of by then. Maybe it's 2-0 by the time Rochez comes in or something. But, you know, what I thought against the Chicago Fire is that Orlando played a very strong road game. They did a good job of taking care of the ball for the most part and, you know, playing team defense and taking, you know, trying to make the most of their opportunities when they came, and they didn't actually get to finish one of those until late in the game. But for me, the back line was phenomenal. Christian Nogueta was phenomenal again. And for me, my man of the match was David Mateos. Andrew, how did you see the game?
I just thought it was, once again, it was a good, solid performance by a little bit of everybody. I thought the back line were really strong. I'm loving the development of the partnership between Colin and Mateos. I called Mateos out a little bit when he first came over. I was concerned that he wasn't going to get that partnership, but I think we're starting to see really the depth of our scouting network. You know, we pulled a guy from nowhere and he's come in and he's put in some solid time, and I feel like he's definitely going to give Hines an issue. Maybe Hines is going to go back up. He's not costing us an international spot. I've been enjoying the midfield. I think Neil has been an underrated player. He's getting some stick in the press, but he has come in and done a stout job of just controlling and being calm and not getting pulled across the field and leaving that to some of the younger legs, which I've been enjoying. And just the fact that we've been scoring, I think that's my number one excitement for this past few games.
Yeah. Who's your man of the match, Andrew?
I gave it to Higuita again. I feel like he just plays with the passion that I want to see from a player who is stuck in a team that was struggling. He just came out, he was bossing it, he was all over, and he was my player of the game.
All right. Daniel, how did you see the match in terms of, you know, what stood out to you, and also who was your man of the match?
Yeah, I got to get this one off first. Andrew, I would never describe Luis Neal as stout right now. That was a very strong word. I feel like the weakest link that we've had all year was when Eric Avila was playing, and quite honestly, Luis Neal. And for all of his veteran savvy, you can just tell he's lost steps through the years, and he looks like he's running in mud sometimes, quite honestly. But to each their own. You know, he's a good player for some points in the match, and it's good to have that veteran on the field. But for the type that, you know, the flair that we like to throw into the game, it's hard to have him, especially in the attacking midfield role. But I definitely...
Look, you can't argue with the fact that he's played attacking midfield twice, and we've won twice.
That's understandable, and I mean, you know, and sometimes when there's a full moon outside, you know, people have babies. But I mean, I can't correlate that with winning in because Luis Neal's on the pitch, just quite honestly. So I think I saw the game as the team going out and deciding to get a win. If you look at Adrian and the people that he brought in with O'Shea and Rochez, he was bringing in the attacking players because we knew we needed 3 points, even if it was on the road. And Shea looked fantastic coming in. Carlos Rivas looked good when he was on the pitch. Rochez, when he came on for Laren, was fantastic. I hope Rivas can end up playing 90 minutes at some point. He just tires himself out, it seems to, whenever he starts. But I think Orlando's on the uptick, and thankfully so, because we had a barrel of a couple of months there. And then that back line where it's Mateos and Colin back there, it seems like they're getting a good relationship that Seb Hines and Colin never really had. They never really seemed to be on the same page for a few games within a stretch, and I think Mateos and Colin will be able to do that. But man of the match, I always go to that defensive midfield position just like you did, Andrew, and Higuita looked fantastic. I mean, his motor and Saren when he's on the field, I don't know how they do it. I mean, I feel like they cover more ground than anybody I see, and they're just still running in the 90th minute trying to get that ball or trying to attack whenever it comes down. If they can get those passes crisp in the final third, that pairing's going to be uber dangerous come next year.
Yeah, really, the only thing I see that strikes me about Christian Nogueta and Darwin Saren that you wouldn't see, like, say, from a some of the best in Major League Soccer at playing defensive mid. You know, I'm talking about a guy like Michael Bradley. I'm talking about a guy like Dax McCarty, maybe. The difference is they have that offensive ability as well to turn a pass into a deadly scoring chance. And that's really the only thing that Seren and Aguita haven't really perfected yet. They've really done a great job with all the other aspects of the game.
Yeah, but Michael, I've never seen a Dax McCarty put a shot on goal like Seren and Aguita can from outside the box. Like, they both have powerful legs. And you got to understand, they're both extremely young. They're both younger than Dax McCarty and Michael Bradley. So hopefully the growth is there for them. They're definitely going to play in a system that's going to allow both those defensive midfielders to roam upfield. And if we can find another attacking midfielder to either play with Kaká or play as a sub for Kaká, I think that's going to help them out tremendously. And I'm really looking forward to their growth.
Yeah, absolutely, and of course, you know, I'm well aware of their youth and their big shot. That's great. When some of those start going in, that's going to be even greater. And Adrian Heath has said repeatedly that he expects somebody to come try to buy his defensive midfielders at some point. You know, might not be this year, might not be next year, but you know, these are the types of players that he's seeking out, or the guys that are developing into what we're seeing. What we're seeing now, I mean, who knows? A guy like Christian Aguita could be playing for, you know, a top four team in La Liga in a couple of years. I mean, it's not out of the question at all. He's really played well. I thought it was a great slight to him for him not to be included at MLS 24 under 24.
Yeah.
Because for me, he's probably been, if not the club's MVP, then certainly top two.
Yeah.
And certainly for his age group, yeah, absolutely. You look at Laren. MLS is famous for just looking at numbers. I mean, you see it every week in you know, MLS Player of the Week. You know, two guys score two goals, and they're going to give it to the big star player. You know, if it's Dom Dwyer and Adrian Winter, then Dom Dwyer is your Player of the Week. That's just the way it goes. There's a little bias there, and there's a bias towards offense. When you look at MLS Player of the Week, you never see it be, you know, it's rarely a central defender, right?
I mean, true.
I don't remember the last time a central defender was MLS Player of the Week, but typically it's somebody who's scoring goals. So there's a little bit of a bias there, but I thought, you know, Laren, 11 goals or not, yeah, he deserves to be there. But Aguita, for sure, I thought was better than at least four or five guys on that list.
I probably would have named more, and quite honestly, I thought it was a snub because without him in our lineup, throughout the year, I mean, look at the players that would have been playing there instead, and just look at defensive midfielders across MLS. Not many outside of the international players that we talk about and the veterans that are there at his age have the complete package like he does. And I thought it was definitely a slight, not meant, of course, but he's got a couple years to put himself in the conversation here in MLS as one of the best defensive midfielders moving forward.
Yeah, and I think he's already top five defensive midfielders in the league. He's very, very, very strong, and I think a lot of people haven't seen him play around the league yet enough to get a sense of how important he is to this team. So, I think it's pretty awesome to get 6 points out of a possible six over 2 weeks. I don't know if we can do make it 9 for 9 here. We've got a game coming up against New York Red Bulls. The first meeting went 2-0 to New York in the Citrus Bowl back in July, and that was the game where you might remember in the 32nd minute, Kyle Laren got sent off for a phantom studs-up challenge on Sasha Kljestan. That Kljestan made an absolute meal, actually probably made a whole week's worth of meals out of it. And Laren's red card was rescinded midweek, but that was too late to help Orlando City get the goal back that Kljestan had scored earlier, and certainly to get any points out of the game. So it's an opportunity here for Orlando City to play a team that's already clinched a playoff berth. I'm certain that they're not going to roll over with the supporter shield still up in the air and playoff positioning to be determined. But it would be nice to go up there with Kaká back, with Darwin Seren back, with Corey Ash back, and Breck Shea, and all of this complement of players that seems to suddenly be a full squad almost. You know, if you're talking about basically everybody but Kevin Molino, you know, it would be nice to see us go up there and get 3 points. So we're going to talk a lot about Red Bulls now, and we're going to bring in our guests to do it. So why don't we do that right now? All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, our old friend Jason Iapico is back from Once a Metro, the SB Nation New York Red Bulls site. Jason, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me on again. I know after last time you guys weren't the best fans of the Red Bulls, but hopefully cooler heads have prevailed since then.
We have nothing against the Red Bulls so much as the referee who tossed Kyle Larin and maybe Sasha Kalestian for acting like a little bitch.
In fairness, and I know this is your first year in MLS, but we've had our fair share of those calls against us where people just completely flopped and not have gone our way. We actually gave up a penalty to, I believe it was Colorado in like the home opener 2 years ago, where Thomas Olave was deemed to have pushed somebody in the back when his arms were nowhere near the back. So, I mean, it all evens out in the end, I guess, is where I'm going with that.
Man, it would be awesome. It would really be awesome if it all evened out in the end because, man, it's been a rough season luck-wise for Orlando City. Jason, before we get any further in this, why don't we give you the opportunity to tell our listeners where to find you guys on the web and on Twitter.
All right. So, obviously, SB Nation blog, onceametro.com. The blog for the New York Red Bulls, New York Red Bulls 2 of the USL, and Sky Blue FC of the NWSL. On Twitter, @once_a_metro. I know that's a weird username. Apparently there was some stuff that went down with it when it was first brought up, so we're stuck with that for now. And personally, mine is @DocTaStooge. That's DocTaStooge.
All right. Well, I'm going to dive right into this and say that we were just speaking of the incident where in the 32nd minute of the first meeting between the two teams, Kyle Larin is sent off with a straight red. Thanks, Ted Uncle, on the sideline. Had to impose his will as the fourth official, and Kyle Larin was gone, and it kind of ruined the game. It was 1-0 at the time, and it stayed 1-0 until stoppage time when Mike Grella was able to put home the equalizer, but Orlando City fought as hard as they could all evening, shorthanded and down a goal, and weren't quite able to come up with that. But we got lots of hate tweets and hate comments from Red Bulls fans about how we were whining because we happened to point out that Sasha Kalestian wasn't actually touched at all. And I'm not going to say Red Bulls fans have been the rudest to us, because that honor belongs to a certain team out of Ohio. But that wasn't very – got some very, very non-good responses. And now you tell me that that's happened to you guys before. I'm sure those people took it just fine and didn't complain about it at all, right?
I'm pretty sure they were complaining. For what it's worth, I try to stay out of other teams' timelines, because it would just be a spiral for me if I went into every single opponent and just complained about everything or saw complaining about everything. Maybe the only exception is DC, because, I mean, it's just funny to laugh at him. But I know there was some heated comments after that. Honestly, when I saw it live, I thought Kalestian went down. I thought it was the right call. And then when I saw the replay, it was very clear that Kalestian did. All right, so let me phrase it this way. I thought Larin deserved a card for the action. I don't think he deserved a red because he didn't make contact, but it was a dangerous – he was attempting a dangerous tackle, whether or not he intended to or not. And the league has been trying to crack down on that this year. So if it was a yellow, I would have been perfectly fine with that. Red, for me, was not the right call. It did, like you said, ruin the game. Even though, you know, Orlando City still fought hard, it probably would have been a much – harder fight for the Red Bulls if there was 11 guys on the field for Orlando. I can't speak to any Red Bulls fans that were particularly angry about everything. But I will say, like I mentioned a few minutes earlier, we've in the 19-20 year history of the team have had our fair share. So we're kind of used to being defensive about it and pointing out when things haven't gone our way. So, I mean, it's just unfortunately a lot of history there that kind of gets brought up whenever something like that happens.
Mm-hmm. So you guys clinched a playoff spot definitely after last weekend's games. What would you classify as success for this season? You obviously had a lot of turmoil at the start with the town hall meeting. Would you be happy with just getting a supporter shield, or do you really want MLS Cup? What would you gauge would be a success for this season?
It's funny because I actually wrote a piece that went out today on What's Metro where I basically said making the playoffs isn't sufficient. Because in a league where over half the teams make the playoffs, that is not a barometer of success. Some fan bases may differ. I know Toronto FC is hoping that they would have a playoff appearance by now, but they don't. For the Red Bulls, I think going into the season, most people expect the playoffs just because, and this is not an offense to Orlando City, but you know, two expansion teams, a weaker Eastern Conference. So it was kind of expected to be in the playoffs no matter what. You listen to some people at the town hall back in January, and they basically said, Pecky took us to one goal within the MLS Cup final. So anything short of that is a disaster because you fired the guy that got us there. At this point in the season, with the playoffs wrapped up, at the top of the, right now, tied with Vancouver in terms of points for top of the standings, which they actually own a tiebreaker over us and wins, which is I can go on a whole rant about how MLS tiebreakers are stupid, but with two games in hand on Vancouver and a fairly lighter schedule compared to what they have to face, I'm hoping for at least a shield. I would hope for an MLS Cup appearance, even a win, but a shield at this point in the season is the bare minimum for me to consider it successful.
Jason, I wanted to talk to you about the supporter shield. Statistically, right now, New York is actually sitting at 62% chance of winning that. So hopefully that gets you a little excited. I know there's a few games left here. But the argument has been made this year, all year long, that the Eastern Conference, of course, has been weakened because of the expansion teams. Because if you look at the bottom seller of Philadelphia and Chicago and those two teams, that it's kind of weak in the entire conference. But when you look at Orlando's play throughout the season, we've actually fared better against Western Conference teams than we have Eastern Conference teams, and would have been standing pretty strong in the standings if we would have been playing Western Conference the entire year. Have you seen a different level of play between Eastern Conference teams and the Western Conference this year?
I would like to say no, but it's more apparent when you go on the road. The Red Bulls were the stat that was thrown out during the Portland game was that the Red Bulls were the first team since 2009 to go on the road to the Western Conference, and I think it was on 4 days rest. Why 4 days rest is the qualifier, I have no idea. But they were the first team since 2009 to go on the road to the Western Conference on 4 days rest and win. So this is where it comes down to me, is that MLS is a league that favors the home side because of, you know, the travel. The closest matchup before this year was LA versus Chivas at the same building. Now it's maybe New York and New York Red Bulls and New York City FC. But if you take that out of the equation, it's New York to like Philadelphia, which is still like an hour and a half, 2 hour drive. There's no accounting for travel in almost every other league on the world, basically. Like, you go to England, the longest trip, I think, is maybe like 4 hours, where here the longest trip is a few thousand miles across the country, three time zones, you know, when do you go out there, how do you adjust, all that stuff. So Western Conference, Eastern Conference, I don't think it matters as much as how your travel pans out. Like, I think the Red Bulls, for the most part, when it came to Western Conference, only had to make two trips out to the actual West Coast, and I think it was Seattle and Portland. I'm pretty sure we played LA at home. We went to Colorado. I think we went to Kansas City and Houston, but aside from that, everybody else came to us from the West. It's not like – and you have to look at it also in terms of what teams. Like, yes, this year, Chicago, Philly, New York City FC, and, you know, Orlando, and even Montreal – if you put them in the West, they're all eighth place or lower. And here's the thing. If you take Colorado and you put them in the East, I don't know if they even get 34 points. Because they'd have to face New York, New England, D.C. two to three times a year. Mm-hmm. it's very hard to say that one conference is actually better than the other when you have on the East Coast you have shorter travel, on the West Coast you have longer travel, but on the West Coast you have right now a few teams that are better on the Eastern Conference teams, but on the Eastern Conference teams don't have, you know, they're not slackers, so it's kind of hard to say one way or the other what, you know, where the balance is. The one thing I could definitely say is that if you look at the home away records, I think that's a lot more telling. The Rebels are one of the few teams that are, I believe, a 500 on the road. And that alone in MLS is a pretty telling stat.
That's a good stat. I'm okay with Orlando City being put in the West because 5-3-2 against the West this year, 2-1-2 on the road against the West.
Yeah.
So that's not too bad.
No, that's really not. I mean, this is something we've kind of kicked around internally where it's just an idea that if you look at the home away records, like right now Chicago is absolutely horrendous on the road. They haven't won a single home game. A single road game.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a much better home record. Like I think they're like, well, obviously all their wins are at home. But I think it's like 7-2-6 or something like that. I don't know the exact number. But you look at like LA, they've only won 2 road games all year, yet they're sitting 3rd in the Western Conference at 47 points.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to win on the road to be a good MLS team.
That's true. I wanted to ask you, Jason, what's different about this Red Bulls team than the first meeting between Orlando City and New York Red Bulls? What's changed since then?
They're a more cohesive unit, and they're much deeper with the signings of Gonzalo Verón and Sean Wright Phillips. When we played you guys, I think it was – I want to say Matt Miazga was like off with the U-20 – for the U-20 World Cup, and which at this time he'll be off with the U-23s for Olympic qualifying. So that actually bodes well for you guys because we have been relatively horrendous without him in the starting lineup this year. But the team has been able, and this is kind of the big thing is we have not had the injuries that we have had in the years past, and when we did, we had players that were able to step in and pretty much just pick the slack up right away. So we had a very cohesive unit that understands what the team is trying to do as a whole, which there's some great articles by Juan Nguyen and I can't remember the name of the other guy off the top of my head. On basically we're adopting the tactics of Red Bull Salzburg in Austria, where we play a high pressure, create turnovers as high up on the field as possible. So you have, you know, Bradley Phillips is more active in defense than he was last year, but it comes back to this team just understands what they want to do, and everybody, one, is buying into it. Everybody's playing the way that they're supposed to, and it just creates this more cohesive unit, especially when you have an injury, somebody steps in, does the job. You don't have to worry about, oh, well, this guy's coming in, he hasn't been playing, how is he going to fit? That has not been the case all year. And then you bring in guys like Gonzalo Verón, who is a designated player and has started one game for us since he signed, because Mike Corella has been lights out, despite being the guy who can never secure a second year at any club in the United States before. And it's just, you know, it's just amazing when you look at it. This is probably one of, if not the best New York Red Bulls teams in the club's history. And it just comes down to, and it's not even from a player personnel point of view. Like, if you look at the team this year versus last year, I tell you, player-wise, last year's was had more talent on it. But this year, it doesn't matter because the system, everybody's bought into it. Everybody's playing the same way, and it's one of those. The sum is greater than the I forget the stupid saying, but
parts.
Yeah, you know what I mean. It's one of those situations where you take Sasha Kljestan and put on a different team, and he doesn't have the same impact as he does this year.
And so you mentioned Matt Miazga and Mike Grella. First of all, Miazga was on the 24 under 24. Are you expecting good things from him going further down the stretch, or do you think he'll get sold? And do you think you'll actually pick up Grella for another season?
Grella probably gets picked up for another year. Whether he starts next year, I don't know. That's to be seen. Miazga, I can only hope he stays. I don't know his contract status. I think it might be one more year. But the thing about him is that the Red Bull teams in Europe have been looking at him. Before the season started, he was actually in Dubai immediately following U20 World Cup qualifying to put in some practice time with Salzburg, who was down there for their preseason. Or sorry, was there for a break because Austria, I think, has a month off in between. But so he's actually been on the radar of the European Red Bull teams for a while now. So he might be gone sooner rather than later, and how that all plays out would be kind of interesting because of the whole parent team dynamic. And if he doesn't go to another Red Bull team, he is being talked about across in like England. I think there was one or two Premier League teams that he was linked to, but I can't remember off the top of my head. So he's going to leave at some point. It's just a matter of when. I don't know if it'll be this offseason. I'm really hoping it'll be at least another year or two, but I mean, the way this kid's been playing, it's very possible he's gone when we talk sometime next year.
You know, Jason, there's one thing that Orlando, I know a lot of the fans' hearts and probably New York's hearts too, are hoping for at the end of the year, and you've already succeeded in that. That's just ending the year better than New York City FC. So, congratulations.
We did that. We were officially past that point as of the Portland match. And it's funny you mentioned that because one of our guys decided that we needed to have a day like Tottenham does with Arsenal, where we need to have an official name for it. So we actually have a poll up on the website. I think right now Metro Day is what's winning, if I'm not mistaken. But we actually had it up there. It was like St. Bradley's Day, Metro Day. There was a few different things that were proposed. It's actually one of our like most commented articles, which is kind of sad since it's only 17. But like, let's see, right now we have actually St. Bradley's Day is winning with 38%. So I mean, it's just one of these things.
I'm a fan of the Totteringham's Day too. I think that's fantastic. So
that only has 1% of the vote for what it's worth.
congrats on that, and hopefully we can surpass them going forward. We're both sitting at on 30 games played, and we're a point ahead of them in the standings. So, good luck this weekend. But I'm sure hoping for 3 points, not just to get the 3 points, but also to kind of shove it in New York's face at the end of the year.
I mean, the one thing I will say is I was at the MLS draft back in January. And you guys had a good contingent of fans there, and I went over and talked to one of my podcast co-hosts was actually there. He was there with the Red Bulls fans that were traveling, and I thought it was really funny to hear that your fans that traveled up gave the New York City FC fans more of a problem than any other set of fans that were there. So, except for the 2 hours or so that we'll play, I'm for you guys and getting past them.
Thanks a lot.
Jason, before we let you go, you know, we got to get your take on the game. What's your key matchup and your final score prediction?
Key matchup would probably be – I don't remember who your forwards are, honestly. Like I'm bad when it comes to other teams' rosters. But with Matt Miazga out for Olympic qualifying, it's going to be – it's going to be Damien Parnell. I can't even guess who the other one is. Right, it's probably going to be Ronald Zubar, who's been playing recently, but hasn't been the same as Matt Miazga has been in the center back position. So, given that the Red Bulls like to high press, and when they're in the attack, they like their fullbacks to get up and cover the wings. Whoever, and I really wish I knew your forwards' names, but I don't. But whoever your forwards are, if they can get past Zubar and Parnell, we're going to be in trouble because I don't think either of them have speed to catch up. That's what actually a funny thing about Miazga. If you look at him, you wouldn't think that, because this guy is like 6'3", 6'4", lanky. You wouldn't think he has speed. And he actually doesn't. Like, he doesn't have close down speed, but Matt Miazga has such a soccer IQ that he makes up for whatever he lacks in speed. And I don't know if Zubar... Zubar is older, so even if he has the IQ, he's not going to be as physically fit as Miazga to make up that kind of space that's going to be needed for covering the counterattack, which is really where the Red Bulls have failed this year. You look at the two games against Chicago, they've beaten us bad on the counterattack, and we were lucky to beat them 3-2 the last time we saw them. So we can't deal with speedy players and a counterattack. So if you guys can get the ball out of your side quickly and break our defense, you guys will win the game. Personally, I think the Red Bulls are going to win. I think we're just, after that win against Portland and clinching, the team's going to be focused on the supporter shield and trying to do something, especially in the first year, to kind of prove that everything, that this is going to stay. I would probably say something like 1-0. It's going to be a tight game because, as far as I remember, the last time we played you guys came close to scoring a few times, and our defense couldn't handle it, and that was without Miazga. So I think it'll be tight, maybe 1-0. I would hope for more, but, I mean, that's not a bad result for the Red Bulls at home on a Friday night where, and this is going to be the kind of look bad, but 7 o'clock starts. And honestly, I wish the game was on Saturday, not just for us, but for you guys too, because you guys deserve to see a good crowd at Red Bull Arena, but you're not going to see it when the game kicks off because everybody's going to be showing up to the game still, especially with the Pope in town.
So
we're going to be lucky if we get maybe like 7,000 to 10,000 in before the game starts. Mm-hmm. I think the last time we played at home on a Friday was just actually Chicago, like two weeks ago. I think we had like 16,000 or 17,000 announced attendance, and was maybe like 7,000 when the game kicked off. So I'm open on that side. You guys will have a good crowd there because that game is going to deserve it.
Well, we'll see what happens. I know that we're not really sure who's going to play forward on Friday night. It could be Kyle Lahren, who it normally is, but there's been a lot of call for maybe Brian Rochez getting a start because he's played very, very well the last two games, had a couple of goals. And but the correct answer, I think, is the key matchup is Breck Shea against anybody on Red Bulls, because Breck Shea right now is on fire. So since he's come back, and he just had a kid this week, so he's got even more to play for this week. So we'll see how that goes. Jason Iapico from Once a Metro and Red Bull Rant, thanks so much for being our guest on the Mainland Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we really appreciate Jason coming on the broadcast here tonight and, giving the Red Bulls perspective. And I feel like we didn't get to really talk about the game as much as the state of the Red Bulls and the state of MLS. But, with playing them a second time, I think we probably know a great deal about them already. I think we've written about them in the past. We've obviously played them and done recaps and that kind of thing. So, I think there's nothing left really to do but to talk about our key matchups for Friday night and do our score predictions. So, Andrew, we're going to start with you. Where do you see this game being won or lost? You think there will be any surprises in the lineup? And how do you think the final score will shake out?
I don't think we'll see any surprises in the lineup. It wouldn't surprise me to see Kaká come back for us. Still not thinking Shea's going to get 90 minutes. It would be nice. I think matchups-wise, we got to see if we can take Grella out of the game. He has been really good for New York going forward, and he's actually really helping out the midfield for spots where they need it. And I think he's really stepped up into covering some of BWP's issues that he's had this year. Another key matchup for me has got to be Colin and Mateos marking Perenel out on corners. A guy just can head the ball really, really well. I think if we can keep both Grella and Perenel quiet, we got a chance to win. However, my score prediction is going to be 2-1 to the Red Bulls. I just don't think we can beat a team that is in contention for the Supporter Shield. We're going to have some people back, but I think it's going to throw off the good chemistry that we've started to develop, and we're going to see some people who play well and just get switched out for guys who might be a little tired, a little bit of travel injuries or anything just kind of stiffening them up. So I'm going 2-1 to the Red Bulls.
All right. Well, I definitely think that you're right about Grella. He's played well, and I think he's very much been a beneficiary of teams paying a lot of attention to Bradley Wright Phillips. I think that's really opened things up for him. And also, I think what's helped him is Sasha Kljestan being there. He's a very good distributor of the ball, and he can find guys when they're open or even when they're not really looking like they're all that open. So as much as I don't like his porn stash and his antics from the first game, you know, I have to admit that he's a good player, and, you know, hopefully we can keep him quiet. But let's go on to you, Daniel. What is your, you know, what do you think we'll see lineup-wise? What do you think we'll see in terms of the key matchup and the final score?
I think there'll be a few changes. One, Shea coming into the starting lineup. I think he's going to be reintroduced. Again, 90 minutes would be a tall order for him, but, you know, anywhere from 65 to 70 minutes, definitely a possibility. I still think Laren's going to get the start up top. I see Rochez right now as a super sub role up top, being able to bring in a little bit of creativeness on his own and get in the box and maybe get a goal here or there. As too much of a value to try to put that onto him to start in a match, especially away like this in a tough atmosphere. But this is a great rematch. And, you know, barring a phantom Kyle Laren leg to a Sasha Kljestan falling down and rolling like he's been shot by a sniper, I think Orlando's going to have a really good chance, because predominantly for that entire match, we played well with New York. And I understand that they're on good form now, but I think we've turned the corner. And we have a little belief in our side, and I think everybody's got that little bit of light at the end of the tunnel that they see, either if it's just from, you know, that small little slim playoff hope, or the understanding that they're growing throughout the season. And if Kaká can come around and show that he's healthy this weekend.
I think we're having another issue with Daniel McGann. That was an unfortunate timed thing. But yeah, I get what he's saying.
Yeah.
No, I totally get what he was saying, and you know, we'll try to get him back on to get his final prediction. But you know, I see what he's saying. I don't know that I would agree necessarily that Breck Shea starts. I think Breck might come on earlier. I have an odd opinion on this. I think that Kaká will start, because I just don't think that he's gonna start the game without his captain. I think he wants Kaká on as long as he can go, and then he'll take him off. So I think that we'll see that change in the middle. I think that he'll stick with Rivas on the left, maybe, and bring Breck in later, is my thought. But I think he'll bring him on earlier than he has done in the past. I think he'll bring him on maybe to try to get him 30 full minutes. Instead of bringing him on like in the 70th or later, I think he'll bring him on maybe at 60 or just, you know, after halftime. And we'll see what happens. But I think that Rochez could start, and I think that Laren could come off the bench in that role. And I really think there's a just the form that Rochez is in right now, I think there's a desire by Adrian Heath to see how that will look in terms of starting. And Daniel, I hear you're back, and I'm sorry you got cut off, but you were talking about Kaká coming back in the lineup.
I was talking about my key matchups and Kaká coming back in healthy. If he comes back in healthy and there's no adverse effect in his play from being out for a little while, I think the matchup's going to be in that midfield with Kaká, Iguita, and then, you know, hometown hero right there from Winter Park himself, the Ginger Monster. But I think Kaká going to put in a couple goals, and I foresee Orlando taking it 2-1.
Wow, two goals from Kaká. That would be amazing, because I don't know when the last time he scored
was. I think he's ready for a game, and I think he's just itching to get out there to put this to rest, that, you know, either he's too old or he hasn't done enough as what he should be doing for a DP and the salary he's getting paid, because he's looked good in spurts, but I think he's well rested and ready to go.
I think the matchup for me that I think Orlando City needs to win is in the midfield, to create those counterattacks that Jason was talking about that their defense has had trouble with. I think the key for me is, if presuming he starts as he has the last few games, if Carlos Rivas starts, he's the key in my mind, because if he can create turnovers and be dangerous, he can really jumpstart the offense. And if it's not him, then it can be Breck Shea. But I think whoever's on that left wing is going to be the key to the game for Orlando City. I think that's where it's going to come from. I think the first time that the teams played, Shea was out. I don't recall if Rivas played, but I know he wasn't in any kind of real terrific form at that point. He was just only starting to scratch the surface. He had that good game against Colorado and then another one in the U.S. Open Cup. But I don't think he was a factor. He may not even been healthy for that New York game. I can't recall off the top of my head. But I will say that that's the key for me, is to start the counterattack. And I think it's just better on the left right now. I think Adrian Venter is a good player. I think he's coming along and starting to find his form in MLS. But he's not like the guy with the pace that's going to get you the dangerous chances. He's going to be the guy who works like give and goes and comes in and gets into space later after the play is already in the box, I think. So for me, that's the big matchup. And I'm going to call this a 1-1 draw. I think, like Andrew, it's going to be tough to go to Red Bull Arena and get a result against a team that's in such good form, that's rolling and trying to win a supporter shield. But I think that this team bears down and gets something out of the game to keep their playoff hopes alive, knowing that, you know, from that point out, there will be no margin for error. But I think still a draw at Red Bull Arena is probably a pretty good result for a team that's right now in seventh place in the standings. I would certainly like it to be more. I would like to see Breck Shea get his first goal in purple. That would be, for me, a big thrill. So to see that, because he's done everything else since coming back but score a goal. So two assists in two games for Breck. Had a kid this week, so how do you top that? You got to go out and score a goal, and maybe a game-winning goal at Red Bull Arena.
I like it.
All right, so guys, any last thoughts here before we sign off?
I'd say watch out for, you know, both Shea and Carlos Rivas starting. I don't think that, you know, Adrian's not going to go into this game playing for a draw. He's not going this game, especially not to get any points. And what would look more dangerous than Laren or Rochez up top and then flanking them on either side, Shea and Rivas? I mean, that type of speed on the field, when you're talking about most likely playing a counter-attacking style, that would be really, really dangerous. I think Shea would be more comfortable on the right. We've actually seen him play on the right over the past few weeks coming in, and I don't think that would be too far-fetched to see Adrian Heath go with that lineup with Shea and Rivas starting.
Yeah, that could happen. I mean, it certainly would be interesting. You will lose that dynamic player off the bench late in the game if you need some fresh legs, but you know, maybe then Adrian Venter could be that guy that comes in and poaches something late. Who knows? Andrew, any last thoughts on Orlando City at New York Red Bulls?
I think I'm going to say that Rochez starts, and I think he scores one early, and that's definitely my goal scorer. But then I think we just don't hold on long enough, and it ends up being a bit of a heartbreaker.
Well, I hope that's not true, but you know, certainly it's going to be a formidable task, and we're looking forward to it. Only four games left. Guys, do we think Kyle Laren's going to get that 12th goal?
I only think he'll get that 12th goal if we give him the time to take a game off and not keep putting him under pressure. I think we have to switch him out, and I think he would get it. I think I'm going to say he gets it against Philadelphia on the final game of the season.
Okay.
Wait,
Daniel?
Wait until the very end, huh? Yeah, yep. I think he's going to score. I mean, you have to look. We have Montreal and New York both at home. I definitely think within that stretch he's going to put, if not one or two goals, in the back of the net. Because either way, he's going to see minutes. Whether or not he's starting or he's coming in off the bench, he's going to see minutes, mm-hmm. and he's going to see a team driving forward to get as many points as possible. So he's going to get opportunities, and he's definitely going to put that 12th on the back of the net.
Well, as the last time we played New York City FC, he scored three of them. So, yeah. You know, maybe that's true. The game that he breaks it. All right, guys, I think that'll do it for this edition of the Mainland Podcast. And we do, again, want to thank Jason Iapico from Once a Metro and also from Red Bull Rant, which I'll be a guest on that and this week. So look for Red Bull Rant this week if you want to hear those guys have their questions for me and see what I have to say about it. And, you know, Friday night, Red Bull Arena, Orlando City, chance to maybe steal 3 points on the road and stay in this thing. And we'll see what happens. And we'll be back to talk about it next week. And we'll also be back to preview Montreal Impact, which tonight, as we are recording this, are playing Chicago Fire. And they're probably killing the Chicago Fire because we need them to lose. But that'll do it for podcast episode 30. We're 30 now, even though we're, by the way, 1 year old as we record this on Wednesday, the 23rd. 1 year old, guys. 1 year as a blog. 1 year anniversary of our blog. So congratulations to all you guys.
Feels pretty good.
Yeah, Daniel hasn't been with us that long, but, you know, we started as a little WordPress site, and we actually we were a WordPress site for a couple of months, and then we got on with SB Nation, and very, very successful so far. So first
like
year was great.
Party in there.
Yeah, there should definitely be. We should have a big party. So all right. So for Daniel McGann and Andrew Harrison, I'm Michael Citro signing off podcast episode 30, saying go City.